All right, Mind Muscle Project, welcome back to this episode of The After Show. We are going to be at the Australian Fitness Expo in Sydney this weekend. We will be podcasting. We'll have a little booth set up. You can find us if you're coming to the show at the Epic Food Stand. We're going to be on the first level. So
There's only one level.
Off the ground floor. Yeah. So if you are around, stay on your Instagram, follow us if you're not doing that already. And come say hi, come drop by. So we're going to be kind of scouting out different opportunities for just kind of short podcasts or potentially long podcasts when we're there. So very excited to be out there. So come say hi if you see us. Look for the Epic Food Stand. Epic has Peak as well.
It's got Peak. It's got Grenade Bars, which is like...
Grenade.
You heard of Grenade? It's like massive in Europe, but it's like brand new here. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like a Quest Bar protein bar.
Okay. But what's with the grenade part of it?
I think it's just like
is it shaped like a grenade?
It's just like get fucking jacked up. It's great. I think they had like pre-workouts and shit before.
Pre-workout bar?
No. They've had those like type of products.
Oh, okay.
And like shit, like they have like a water bottle in the shape of a grenade and shit.
Right. It's because like when Quest started out as a board game company and they pivoted into protein bars, they kept the name.
That destroy me.
Right, that's right. So that's how that happened. So yeah, that's where we're going to be this weekend, guys. And then of course, we've just been planning the US trip. We don't want to list off the entire lineup yet because... we want to just confirm it all before we start naming names, but hopefully on the next few after shows, we can get you excited about some of the guests that we've managed to book in for the trip. So that's May 3rd to 17th. We're going to be on that trip. So YouTube content, Instagram, everywhere, lots of great guests, all in person. It's going to be a really fun trip. And then of course, there will be an opportunity. Maybe we'll do a little meetup while we're in there in the US if we get some downtime as well. So
we're in a few different places. So
yeah. It'll be really cool to meet the US listeners. I know there's a lot of you out there and there's a contingent. So yeah, it'll be really, really fun to kind of hang out. Maybe we'll meet at like In-N-Out Burger or something and just smash some double doubles or whatever is on the east side. You guys can show us around there if we get some time. So yeah, feel free to reach out if you live in some of those areas, Ohio, New Jersey, New York, Philly,
Texas,
Houston, Austin, Dallas.
And NorCal now.
Yeah. Yes, yep. Yeah. So feel free to reach out if you're around there and maybe we'll do a little meetup. So very excited for the upcoming stuff. We're in the studio. We've got our new curtain installed, Joe Rogan style. It's looking good. The reality is you get a curtain because it dampens the sound and it sounds really good. So slowly, piece by piece, obviously those of you who watch the YouTube content kind of see the curtain at the moment. But yeah, piece by piece, we're kind of building out some of the new stuff in this studio. So it's coming along nicely.
Yes.
Yeah, very pumped. Okay, so this week we're going to jump to some listener questions. And then we don't have a Netflix documentary, but what we do have is we have a TED Talk for people to watch this week. So first question that we've got. Now, we get obviously a lot of the loyal listeners that are coming in with the same sort of people like dropping similar questions. So we may be answering some of these things we've already answered before. So forgive us if we have. So first question comes from Jay Healy 26. Are BCAA supplements a waste?
I feel like that question is it's like a essential question for anyone that starts training. But you really need these BCAs?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fucking getting inconvenient.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I actually was just reading about BCAAs versus EAAs, just randomly. I think because John Meadows had a really good video on it, who we just had on the podcast. He actually is a fan of EAAs.
Yep.
But I have heard both. It does seem like it depends a bit more if you're getting your total protein amount or if you're not, which way you go. But regardless, he was a pretty big fan of them both, really, and he preferred EAAs. And most people, it seems like one of those things, it's a little bit like creatine. Where it's kind of like in the why not category.
Right.
It's like...
if you got the money.
Yeah, it's like, yeah it's like a bit helpful and there's definitely is science behind it. Doesn't turn you into a full, like, 30 kilo extra muscle beast because you took BCAAs. But everyone I've seen on the topic is generally always like, hey, it's better than not having it. And there are special circumstances like when you train fasted and stuff where it's like particularly useful.
Mm. Yeah, that was the only thing I was going to say is like you'll get most of your benefit when you are in a calorie deficit and you need to like consume something that doesn't really impact your, you know, your progress or like doesn't add calories or many calories and you want to like reduce muscle protein breakdown, BCAAs are like the ultimate supplement for that. Yeah. So that's,
I think even if you just don't eat in the morning,
Yeah.
So if you don't eat in the morning and you train, you still fast at like probably 12, 13 hours.
Yeah.
They usually say it still has benefit in that area.
Yeah. The only concern is like you don't want to really be drinking like a sweet drink in the morning that early. It's just not good for your palate, right? To be like smashing basically a highly sweetened liquid.
Beverage.
Yeah, that early in the morning, even though people smash like orange juice and cereal and stuff, but it's just not ideal. Like I wouldn't be going down that path. And then you can't have them raw because it just tastes nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, you don't want to have it raw. So if you have the money, definitely worth the investment.
On the hierarchy though, it definitely falls below something like creatine on the hierarchy of effectiveness.
Oh yeah. Oh, it doesn't even make the top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make the top 10.
It's
that's
useful,
for sure. Yeah.
But it's not like the game changing supplement.
No, definitely not. Okay. Hopefully we answer that question. Jay Healy. Another question from someone who's answered we've answered a few of in the past. Court Jamie, knee pain 101 and go. Well, that's it's a very broad question, but look, let's speak from experience, briefly. So Raf and I both had knee pain in the past. Raf, why don't you go over your knee pain first and how you went about fixing it?
So I had quad tendonitis, which is different to Lachlan. So that's usually you get that, you feel it like on the top of the knee. It's like really sore right in the middle as it attaches to your quadricep muscle. So top of the knee, right in the center, above your kneecap basically. And it's sore when it's bad, it's fucking everything. But it's generally obviously mostly sore on squatting movements, not that sore on deadlifts and stuff like that. Anything with like a lot of knee bending. So I had mine...
Loaded knee bending.
Yeah, loaded knee bending. I had it for ages. But like air squats and shit still really hurt. And I had it for probably a year and a half, 2 years.
Now?
No, not anymore.
Oh, back then.
Back then, air squat. Yeah. You know, everything would hurt. Even just like if you stood up for a long period of time, it would be sore. And I do particularly see this with people that, have big meaty quads all the time. Like this seems to be a common thing. You have a massive quad. At some point, you get some pretty bad quad tendonitis. It is difficult to say exactly what helped it the most, but I will say the biggest things I did notice was that when I just had my hips functioning better, my quad tendonitis slowly got better over time. So that's like recruiting the right muscles, like loosening up shit that was really tight, moving better, actually getting my hip flexors strong, or even just turned on in the first place. So like,
what exercise?
Kind of like compression work, like compression pulses.
Yeah.
They used to get my hip flexors firing. Like actually
like
did,
leg lifts, gymnastics.
Yeah,
leg
lifts.
Yeah.
Actually really did help. Anything, probably the two muscles that made the biggest difference were leg lifts, I guess, for my hip flexors, and then glute medius work. So like stability work, monster band works, doing single leg work, stuff like that. So getting that part of my glutes firing and then my hip flexors firing, which are all around the hip complex, those two things made the biggest difference by far traveling down to help out the knee. Pretty much everything I did, like, at the knee joint didn't really do anything long-term. So, like, rolling out the muscles around it, like, a tiny bit of relief on the day, but nothing really in the long-term. But working on my hip function made the biggest difference.
And then we also experimented with dry needling in the tendon as well. It didn't help. You never got surgery, did you? You never got injections?
No.
Yeah.
No. Like, needling made a massive difference in, like, the next hour and a half.
Right.
Crazy difference. Like, I could, like, needle it and it felt so much better, or, like, scrape it and shit. But it just kind of came back the next day.
Yeah, it's probably just because you're desensitizing yourself to that pain, right? For a temporary amount of time, changing the way your brain is signaling pain to that area.
Pretty much everything helps. So, like, wrapping it helps, rolling it out would help, needling it would help, some sort of warm-up would help.
Yeah.
Like, every single thing someone suggested did help.
But it was a Band-Aid solution.
But it just came
temporary
back
fix
really quickly.
Yeah, yeah. I experienced probably what's more common, which is patellar tendonitis, which is below the kneecap. I'd say it's more common than quad tendonitis.
Yeah, for sure. And it tends to happen more, I think, with people where their knees go far over the toes.
Yeah.
Which is not what happened to me. Like, you know, more looser ankles or whatever.
Yeah.
Those tend to be the people that get patella.
Yeah. Yeah. So, why it was happening, the biggest reason is just volume. Like, that's how you really get any injury, right? Is that particular joint, that area that gets loaded in a way that is unsustainable for that tissue. So, there's way too much volume going through that joint. We were doing way too much training. We were not recovering enough. Even with all the accessory work and chiropractic work in the world, you can't just keep up with that much. The tendon just couldn't take the amount of squatting that we were doing. And anyone that's pushed too hard experiences this on any joint. You know, if you just sit at a desk for too long, that's why your lower back hurts, right? It's because it's too much volume, too much compression volume for the lower back. It's why people go from maybe an active job and then they move to a desk job and they all of a sudden have back pain they didn't have before, even though they've kept up training, they're still healthy. It's because you're now spending 6 hours, 8 hours a day loading your lower back by sitting in a chair. So anytime you get an injury, it is related to volume to that joint, unless it's acute, obviously, then it's going to be from that acute trauma. So if you have an injury, a chronic injury at your knee, it's likely whatever you're doing is too high volume. You need to pull the volume out of some exercises that are affecting that joint. That is going to be the most, like, that's going to help you most immediately. But then if you've got movement issues, you're going to have to fix those for, like, long term, like with what you did, Raph, with your hip.
Yes.
So it's twofold. Pull some of the volume out to reduce the pain in the short term. And then in the long term, look at your movement patterns and then try and fix those. If you're moving really well, it's just a volume thing. You just can't, your tendon or your joint just can't tolerate it for whatever reason.
It's also, I think, there's definitely some exercises that are so much worse for it than others. You know, there was some stuff like, you know, like heavy snatches or like snatch balance, things was like really like sharp and dramatic, quick movements that just made it so much worse. And even just pulling those like highest risk movements out of it, or the ones you know you tend to move worse on, made a massive difference. It was when the volume of those went up that it really got bad.
I still get knee pain in lunges, and not during it, but after it, because I just think I did some long-term damage to the tendon that hasn't fully recovered. And I think when it's put on a big stretch and loaded, then like in a lunge, then it really like flares up the next day. Not too bad, like it's nothing that would affect the next day's training, but I know if I did that and then I did another day of lunges and then I did like a comp and then I did it, like it would come back, you know. I can feel it coming back. And part of it is just accepting that you do some damage to your joint to the point where it's not the point of no return, but it's the point of no returning back to where you were. Yes. Like we just did so much damage, we can never go back to that much volume because we damaged the tendon too much. And once you accept that and you just realize, okay, I'm just not going to be able to run like that anymore, I'm just not going to be able to squat like that anymore, then you just don't, you stop hurting yourself. You start looking after yourself better. And that's sort of like a mindset thing as well. Now, that was our experiences. Obviously, there's like meniscal stuff. I know you had meniscus surgery that came from like something more acute. And there's like, you know, the ACL, the PCL, MCL, all that sort of stuff. That's just a whole different ball game. And we don't want to jump into that because we haven't really experienced that. But the most common ones, which are like the overloading of the tendon, the quad and the patella tendon, address it with those things.
Yeah. And I think the good thing about them was, even they're a tough one, but because they come on slow and they last for a long time, but you generally can train around them a lot. Like we kept going and we like did regionals and trained and like everything still went pretty good.
Yeah.
Considering it's just really annoying in a really long time. If I had my time again, I would have been more careful with it. And it's been like, you know, you don't have to do the workout with warbles. You could do a different movement for warbles or whatever and not make it worse. But I also think it's like, it's not the end of the world. There's heaps of different stuff you can do, different stances, just different like variations on the way you're training now, which is going to make it slowly better over time instead of slowly worse over time.
And probably the other thing you need to consider is you generally won't get stronger.
When you have it.
Yeah.
In those movements.
Yeah. 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 Most people expect that even if it's painful, I can still train through it. There is inhibitory signals that your brain is subconsciously and consciously sending to that area to not have it produce maximal force because it's damaged. It doesn't want to make the tissue worse. That's generally what you found, right?
Yeah.
When you had bad injury, like we were still strong, but we weren't making
progress. Yeah.
Which is like, it's shocking when you train the appropriate volume for that joint and you do the accessory exercises in the appropriate volume and you recover, how quickly you can make progress, which is what I experienced with my bench press, right? Because I knew that there was a high chance of going from like benching once a week to like 3 to 4 times a week that I would get injured. And I've had like a pec thing before, not much, just like a niggle. I knew I needed to keep up my accessory exercise, keep up my shoulder flexion range, all that sort of stuff. And I stayed injury free. That's why I was able to make so much progress. Because like when there's nothing, there's no signal like, oh, that's a little bit sore today, I shouldn't push it. When it's just like, I feel fresh, my muscles feel good, you can make so much strength progress. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. Actually makes such a big difference.
On the assistance as well, the other thing I would do now, if I was doing the same situation again, is I would do isolation work at the knee. So, knee extensions and hamstring curls.
Yeah.
I've been doing some of them recently, and I really do feel like, particularly knee extensions, seems like the last thing you might need. But it feels so good on the joint to just do some like lighter, high rep isolation work, both directions at the knee. There's just not much of that when you're doing all the functional movements. So I would do knee extension and I would do knee flexion if you have access to a cable machine.
Yeah. James says that functional fitness and healthy fitness is bodybuilding.
Mm.
Yeah, that's James OPT Fitzgerald. Okay, let's move on to the next question. So, next question is, do you guys, are from E. Valdez, do you guys think that the fitness industry is overly saturated with fitness professionals? Yes.
Well, it's definitely more than in other industries. So, strange ways worded the question. There's obviously heaps of fitness professionals in the fitness industry.
Yeah.
For good reason.
Overly saturated. I think it's just too easy to call yourself a fitness professional.
Man, I actually don't think so. Like, it seems to me a lot of the time people are after a lot of trainers. Like, people need trainers still.
Yeah.
It's not like generally there's like, man, there's just too many trainers, like so much choice.
Mm.
And it's in other industries, like it does happen. Maybe sometimes it can happen with like lawyers and stuff like that. But I think it is a situation where, it seems like there's a lot, but the demand is so big because so many people are out of shape.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it from a one-on-one perspective, like you need a lot of people if each trainer needs their own fucking trainer.
Mm.
And so many new types of gyms are opening up, like constantly, particularly boutique gyms. So I really don't think that there's too many.
Mm.
Like if you think about how much more opportunity there is now than there was 20 years ago, unlikely like that's filtered all the way down to more people trying to do that as a career.
Yeah.
So I really don't think so.
I think the question maybe has a second intention of like, do we have too many people out there who don't know what they're doing? And we do. We definitely do. I think obviously because of the information age in the fitness industry, the more you know, it seems like the better you are as a trainer. But what you begin to realize over time and us having, you know, trained people, thousands of people for the last 5, 6, 7 years, you need to, coaching is very little to do with the information that you have and much more to how well you can get someone to do it. So even if you know that, you know, eating protein and vegetables and being in a calorie deficit is good for weight loss, simple information, obviously you could go down rabbit holes about keto, ketosis and, you know, grass-fed versus grain-fed meat and, you know, the different omega-3s, omega-6s in meats, and this vegetable has these things and this vegetable has those things and all this sort of stuff, right? Doesn't matter.
Mm.
If you can't get the client to do it, then you're not getting the result, right? And you're not a you're not a good coach. And so that's really the art of the whole thing, is what you realize over time is like, it's so intricate because you're trying to change human behavior. That's what you're doing. You're not like building a house, right? Building a house, nothing, human interaction doesn't really get in the way. You got to put the bricks down, you got to put the cement in, right? You got to do all that stuff. But at the end of the day, the house is going to get built. Like, you just know once you start, as long as shit doesn't go wrong, you're going to have a roof over your head pretty soon. You almost don't know when someone rocks up if you're going to get them the result, because there's so much that can happen in their life, right? Someone could go through a divorce. Someone could lose their job. Someone could just lose motivation and fall off. You know, someone could fall into a bout of anxiety or depression or self-doubt, or they could get some initial results and then think, okay, I've done all the hard work, and then stop doing the things that got them there and fall back. And it's just so many factors that come into it. The vast majority of demand for fitness professionals are, coaches and PTs that are helping people change, you know, fat people to skinny people and skinny people to bulky people. But, it's so difficult, and information is just only one small part of it. And there's a lot of people out there who, have that information and just feel overly empowered with it and just aren't really doing much with it.
Yeah, so I don't think, it's not that there's not enough. I think it's more that just, unlike other industries, the vast majority of people in fitness are in like their first 3 years. So if you took like a different profession, like accountants or some shit, you know, you barely hear from the ones that are in their first 3 years. The vast majority are like, oh, I've been in this like 10 years, 15 years, 25 years. Whereas in fitness, and I think it's, you know, something to do with the fact that it is like pretty new. There wasn't as much of it not that long ago. It's like hard work with the extreme hours of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for people to make a really good living out of it. And it takes a lot of energy from you. So I think people burn out at a stage.
Mm.
And like, all those factors come together where most trainers are like, oh, I'm just starting out.
Mm.
So you have this like massive majority of beginners in an industry, which is weird. And it just makes it so that most people aren't actually very good yet because they all just started.
Mm. It's interesting. I mean, the whole dynamic of the industry has changed so much, and there's so many industries right now that are just going through this massive overhaul, especially because the appeal for a lot of fitness trainers is now is, you know, they're being fed this mindset shift, which is, you know, it's totally legitimate. It's like, hey, you know, if you only spend 1 hour on the floor with a client, you can only make money off that client. So you should go online, because in that 1 hour, you can serve 20 clients, right? The issue is that exactly what I said to you before is like, you don't know. It's so hard to give people the result just off a video. Some people are self-motivated. They know what they're doing. But the shift to all the apps, you know, we've had so many people on that have these apps. The shift to gyms where like technology is a big part of it, like heart rates and staying in different zones and, you know, following online trainers and just kind of have people guiding the workouts. That whole shift, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but it's happening. And so people, you know, when we started, the path was like, all you thought to yourself was get PT certificates, join Fitness First, be a trainer. But now people are thinking, okay, cool. Get really jacked, film all my workouts, put them online, take nudes, and then post them, and then sell online programs. Like, it's whole different ballgame. Like, it's a whole new category of what is a fitness professional. And it didn't exist 10 years ago when we started. So, that's part of the reason that people feel like it's becoming more saturated, is that now, because people are consuming so much content, like through Instagram, fitness content online and YouTube and stuff, they're not, like before, you only saw fitness professionals when you were at the gym. But now, you see them like on your phone.
All day on your phone.
All the time. And then if you go home and you watch YouTube on your TV, you're seeing them all the time. So, it probably feels like they're just constantly around.
But also that particular type of service gets saturated so much more quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're template programs. You know, it's like, how many people need to bring out like a template, just like general fitness program?
Yeah.
Like, you don't need that fucking many of them.
No.
Because they're just not offering anything majorly different to the other person, because they're not individualized.
Yeah.
It's like template programs. So, so that will get saturated so much more quickly than like a PT.
Yes.
Because each PT can only help like, whatever, 10, 20 people. So, you need a lot of them.
Mm.
But yeah, those online programs, like, I think that is something that will get saturated very quickly, because they're not actually very different from each other. Like, very slight variations, and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands can do each one.
I just wonder how successful those programs are going to be in the long term. Obviously, they make a lot of money, but they churn through a lot of people, right? Because, not because people don't have the right intentions, it's just that they're missing all the things that really contribute to long-term success, right?
Yeah.
Personal, human connection, exactly. Relationship.
Like, how long are you going to do one of those random group programs on Instagram before you want to try a new one?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Well, I mean,
it's not that long.
You know how, you know, it's just like reaching that, you know, it's hit massive saturation point when it's hit like the full mainstream. And it's hit the full mainstream because Michael B. Fox, I believe, or Michael B. Jackson, he's the guy from Rocky. You know the new Rocky? Apollo.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Apollo? Whatever it's called. You know, they're just shredded.
It's got
black
Rocky
guy.
In the movie.
Yeah.
It's got the guy.
His trainer has their own app now. And he's obviously like the face of the advertising.
Yes.
And the exact same thing is happening with Chris Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth is in incredible shape, Thor. And he's assembled his entire roster, like his nutritionist, his mindset person, his obviously like just his trainer, probably his like yoga teacher or something. So you can get like access to five of his people all in one app. So if he hasn't completely obliterated the market already, he's about to take everyone that was ever going to consider it, and they go, oh, familiar face, Hollywood icon, mad body, world-class trainers, obvious choice, super cheap price, $9 a month or whatever, and they're going to choose that over, you know. Well, not necessarily. Obviously, people have hardcore fans that built up, but, you know, the Andrew Papps, Tanya's, all that, people have been on the podcast. They're probably going to lose a lot of the potential new clients to something like that.
Yeah, well, they've got to offer something different, which is like some more value, like some aspect of like individualization on some level, right? Where it's like, oh, like you're going to get more of my time. But if it's just like sets and reps, then you like don't really care where it comes from, right? Sets and reps, like you're probably going to go with the biggest dog in the industry. But yeah, like the smaller programs, like there's got to be something that is like, this is why you do like my smaller thing.
Mm.
Then you go with like the biggest dog there is.
Yeah. And if you're in that market, the best thing you can do for yourself is just social proof. Just show people the results that you have gotten and just go hard on that. Go after that niche. All right. Let's end listener questions there. Who's sponsoring the show today?
So today we have True Protein, which is right behind us. So extremely exciting, but they have brought out...
Well, look, here's BCAAs.
So they have one flavor of ZMA, and it's a lemon burst flavor. And basically, as of in the next 5 days, they're bringing out the new flavors of ZMA. So they're going to be 20% off when you go, only because they've just come out.
Right, right.
So you can go check them out. We are getting some taste testing happening later in the month. So as soon as they arrive, then they'll get sent over and we'll report back what we think.
Yep.
But yeah, right now... in the next few days, they'll have the new ZMA flavors up. So it's basically the same really good product they've always had, except now there's just more options on flavors. Mm. You can find the one that you like. The one they already had tasted awesome. But it is, you know, because you have it before bed, you like to have something that tastes good right before bed. So I think that'd be a pretty cool option for a lot of people.
So just to give you guys a quick rundown, ZMA. Magnesium is essential for the maintenance of electrolyte balance, energy production, and normal neuromuscular function, which basically means... making sure that all your shit is running properly. Zinc also plays a role in the regulation of cellular growth and tissue repair. Vitamin B6 rounds off the blend by supporting metabolism and psychological function. This is just an absolute staple in my nighttime routine. I would highly recommend anyone who struggles to kind of like just wind down, not even if it's sleep, if you're just a bit too stimulated at night, use this as your anchor habit to consume and then remove all the stimulation before you go to bed, to switch off your phone, to switch off your iPad and your TV.
It is. It's a really good anchor.
Yeah.
So, this week on the 8th, you get a free Mac Black Matte water bottle.
Mac. Get a free MacBook Pro.
Which is like, there's like 1 liter with a sexy handle True Protein water bottles.
Nice.
And then from the next week, you get the True Protein flavored ZMA. Finally on offer, 20% off.
Fantastic.
Use the code MMP10.
Mind Muscle 10
for 10% off.
Nice. All right. So we're getting into this TED Talk today. So we've chosen this TED Talk because we're going to have this guest in America, hopefully. So her name is Bea Voce. I think that's how I say it. Four-letter first name, four-letter last name. And the TED Talk is called The Simple Cure for Loneliness. 13 minutes, 28 seconds. It's got 3.8 million views. A little bit of background on Bea. She is what appears to be a former sort of reality TV star turned inward, looked at herself and gone, I have some deep psychological issues and deep need for attention and validation from others. And I'm going to make a TED Talk about why that's obviously fucked up and how to fix it and how the world is suffering from extreme loneliness. So the fact that she starts... like the opening fact of the whole thing is 1 in 5 people suffer from loneliness. And I guess it's interesting how you would define loneliness, but Raph, would you have say you would be in that 1 of 5 at some point in your life?
So 4 out of 5 people are hanging out together and one guy is sitting home by himself.
I guess.
No, I don't think I have ever really suffered from loneliness. I don't know how you would define it.
How would you define it?
I would guess what they mean is that people that are like really... I guess, don't have anyone to turn to, and they're, I guess, upset about that fact. So, there's, like, some sort of, like, disappointment in the fact that they need somebody at this point to be able to have some sort of connection with, and they're missing that connection.
So, they don't have, like, a support network.
Yeah, and they particularly need it. I do think it's one of those things that is, like, when you need it, it's, like, you might have the same connections you had at another point in your life, but at some point in your life, you really need it more than other points in your life. So, you can become lonely with basically the same scenario.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's like loneliness, as I would define it, is probably more like a state of mind. It's like you have the support network or you have the people around you, or you don't, but you feel like you're alone.
Mm.
Like you feel like no one can relate to you, or you don't want other people's help, or you feel like no one can help you, and you just kind of get trapped in your own stories about... who you are, what you're doing, what kind of how you're reacting to whatever the circumstance is. And so it is something that really kind of need to you know, use other people, use human connection to bring yourself out of. I think it's important, right? Which is why, what's the mental health day called? Are you okay?
Yes.
Yeah, are you okay? And it starts with, because, I mean, that state of mind that you get yourself in is because people don't share it with anyone, right? And then obviously people are good at hiding these things, you know, good at putting on a front and pretending like things are okay when they're not. And I guess this is, this podcast is sort of a message out there about, you know, if you are sort of suffering from loneliness, this may be why it's happening, but this is a way to kind of fix it. And so basically how they go on about fixing that is, was social anchoring. Was that the term that you used?
Yeah, it was an anchor, like an anchor connection. So one thing that you always do on a regular basis, that gives you connection to other people.
Yeah. And that was, in her scenario, like a regular Monday night meetup on the couch with her girls. And they said in France, it's like every night people eat for 2 to 3 hours. Any of our French listeners out there, I'm sure you can vouch for long dinners every night. Seems like a huge waste of time, but obviously it's important. But I think just in general, obviously this issue is becoming more and more pertinent as our connection to social media, as our digital lives become more and more a part of our everyday, we lose actual human connection. So I think the message here is to find some kind of practice in your daily life which allows you to interact with people without any distractions and just genuinely sit down with people that you want to speak to and you know, people you want to hear from and listen to, and just kind of interact, which is why I think that, firstly, the CrossFit gym is, or the functional fitness group community gym is so important for people. And second thing is, it's getting worse. Like, people are hanging out way too much on their phones in our gym. Got to get rid of your phone when you're training. You got to be present in the class and with the coaches and all that stuff. Not just at our gyms, but in all those gyms out there. Like, how bad is Globo Gyms getting? Like, they're becoming so bad with in-ear headphone technology, which completely blocks out all sound, so no one wants to speak to anyone. The fact that in your rest sets, you can just be on social media and just constantly browse and just live in some other world. And then for the 10 seconds you take to do a working set, you don't want to look at anyone because it's awkward. Like, they have become social, isolated gatherings of people. Like, if you really think about it, right, it's this big, giant crop of these retarded machines where everyone goes in, no one speaks to anyone, and it's like really, really awkward and isolated, and it's kind of lonely in a way, because they're kind of like, a lot of people that go to Globo gyms are doing it out of self-hate. They don't like the way they look, they hate the way they are, they're trying to punish themselves with exercise, right? They're doing 4 hours on the step climber, they're doing 3 hours of intervals on the elliptical, all that stuff, because they don't like themselves. It's not because they love themselves and they want to make themselves a better person. They hate who they are and they want to punish themselves and change it. So they've like created this really toxic environment, which is why I think when they come to a gym like ours or another CrossFit gym or a functional fitness gym, they're like, oh, it's cool, you can like speak to people. And you kind of see it, right? They're awkward at first, like, oh, why is this gym so social? But then after a while, it becomes so important to them because they get that connection.
Yeah, well, I think most people are really busy with work, right? So you go to work the whole day and you just have a little bit of time in the morning and the evening. So it's very unlikely people are going to prioritize like an hour social event in their day, right? Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible for good reason with most people. But they can dedicate an hour to their fitness. That's why it's such a special thing, right? Is that if you can make that a social event, it's like, hey, you actually got a full hour of social activity, amazingly, that no one else would prioritize if you weren't getting fit in the process. So that is what I've thought about, and you're spot on about the Globo gym. Like, I go to the Globo gym to be lonely. So I'm like, man, I just don't want to talk to anybody. So I'm gonna get these big fucking headphones, I'm gonna put some music on, I'm just gonna have them on so no one speaks to me. And like, this is the perfect opportunity to be lonely and just get whatever I want to get done. But yeah, there is an atmosphere in those gyms that is like almost a little bit toxic. I don't know what it is, but something about being there that you just get a bit negative. You're like, why is that guy shouting? Like, the weight's so light. Why is he growling? And like, he's just growling because he's just doing his set. And then someone else is like, why are you dressed up like that? It's just not Instagram. Like, you don't need to be that dressed up for today. But somehow, you're just in there and you just get annoyed at everybody. I don't know what it is. You're like, bro, you have been on this set. Like, sometimes someone's like, oh, you can't set in with me. I'm like, but you're on your phone in between sets. Just let me set in. And I leave there sometimes, yeah, just like you haven't really had a good conversation with anybody.
No.
But you've had three negative interactions fighting over the lap pull down.
Yeah.
And yeah, it can become like, I could imagine if that's your only real social time is the Globo gym alongside your work, and work can even get pretty toxic, you could probably get pretty lonely pretty quickly.
How many people come to us and they used to train at the Globo gym with a training partner, but as soon as that training partner left, for whatever reason,
they moved, they're like,
I need a new gym. The Globo gym's not such a bad thing, but if you really think about it, they like it because they're with someone they're training with.
Yeah.
But as soon as that person's not there, not many people can say they enjoy it that much. Mm. Yeah.
And you have a few like special personalities that like go in there without their headphones on and they say hi to everyone and they're like, they really make a fun thing of it. But that is hugely the exception.
Yeah. Big time. All right. Well, go watch that TED Talk. So, The Simple Cure for Loneliness by Bea Voce. It's a TEDx talk in Salt Lake City.
It is a good talk. She's clearly put some preparation.
Yeah, yeah. No, some good acting and stuff in there. So, great talk. All right, guys. That's it for this week. Remember, we are week two of our Training Journal journey. Mm. If you want to join in, thetrainingjournalbook.com, MMP15.
How's your training going?
Oh, good question. It's going. It's going, but it's the same thing. Everyone's like, man, how's your, how's your bench press going? I'm doing the training.
You should have got stronger in 9 days.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a hard thing to answer. Like, training's going well. I haven't tested it. I'm not going to test it until the next, 90 to 100 days. So, I'm just assuming I'm on the right path. So. Mm. But I'm doing some new sort of interesting, like, explosive training and stuff. So, yeah. How about you?
Well, I've realize that there's serious consequences to choosing this goal.
Oh, terrible.
I was just like, oh, this sounds like a pretty fun goal. And I remember I told my coach, Dar, he's like, do you really want to do this? I was like, no, this will be good. He's like, it's not going to be fun, dude. And now I've air biked, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. No, sorry. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Now it's Tuesday, I'm having a rest day on it. And my bum is very sore. And I've realized this is like harder than I thought it was going to be. But it's good. I think it is awesome. I really want to try out some of the no nasal breathing stuff that we learned with Patrick McCowan.
Yeah.
So I'm going to experiment with that and I'll report back how it goes. Some of the, I've already been using it in the warm-ups, breath holds and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And immediately, if you just do some basic breath holds before a session and or sometimes you do none, you notice the difference straight away. Mm. You don't get that, I haven't warmed up feeling on your first few intervals. Yeah. So, I've already seen some benefit and I want to try some more of it.
Nice. All right, guys. There you go. TheTrainingJournalBook.com, MMP15. If you want to join in and get 15% off. And remember, we're going to be at the Fitness Expo this weekend in Sydney. So, come say hi at the Epic Foods then. Yep. All right, guys. Peace. Hey,